back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. As promised, we have IQ Al Rasooli with us now. You can reach IQ at alrasooli.com. That's two S's and two O's, alrasooli.com. And you can purchase volumes 1, 2, and 3 of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam at either authorhouse.com or amazon.com. Before we say hello to IQ, there is a more tragic news out of the world of Islam. 101 people, at the very least, were murdered in a series of bombings in Pakistani cities today. It's one of the most the bloodiest days in recent years. And these particular bombings, for the most part, targeted Shias, with Sunnis killing Shias. There is a distinct possibility in this particular case that this is not Taliban orchestrated, that in fact this is an outgrowth of the proxy war that we're seeing in Syria, where Saudi Arabia, as the kind of the lead dog in Sunni Islam, is trying to fight a proxy war against Iran, the lead dog in Shia Islam, and that there is a distinct possibility that this same weaponizing and arming of Sunni Muslims in Syria is now manifesting itself in Pakistan with Iran arming the Shias. And if this is the case and it continues to boil over as a worldwide confrontation between Shia and Sunnis, then what a mess it will be. So even though, IQ, we had decided this morning that we were going to speak specifically on the topic of women in Islam, I know you have some insights into this. Please share your thoughts on this divide now that is becoming so bloody between Shia and Sunni Muslims.
Thank you for having me again to start with.
No, my pleasure. For those who do not know, IQ Al Rasooli is the single most effective and articulate spokesperson on the true nature of Islam. No one knows this religion better than IQ.
Thank you, sir. All the time, the news media speak about militant groups as if there are non-militant groups. I want the American people to understand it is so fundamental. There are no shades in Muhammad and Islam. Anybody who is a believing Muslim, whether he's Shia or Sunni, is literally a killing machine. They have no choice in the matter because they are programmed to be evil. They're not born evil, they are programmed to be evil. How are they programmed to be evil? The Quran programs them to be evil. The Sunnah of Muhammad, which is the traditions about Muhammad, programmed them to be evil. So to speak about radical Muslims and extremist Muslims is a red herring. And it's definitely deceiving the American and European people into thinking there are shades in Islam. There aren't. Osama bin Laden, they call him a terrorist. From the point of view of the West, yes, he's a terrorist. But from the point of view of Islam, he was the most perfect fundamentalist Muhammadan Muslim that has ever walked the earth since Muhammad. Why? Because he's fulfilling Sharia. What does Sharia say? What is Sharia? Sharia is founded on the Quran, which is Muhammad's Quran and Muhammad's Sunnah. And what are they? They are hate mongering, war mongering, misogynist, racist, duplicitous, disloyal, vile, and is totally ungodly. So how could anybody who is a follower of Muhammad behave in any way different than Muhammad? Back to you, sir. It's amazing how people can't figure this fundamental item. You know, to the core, it is the core of Islam. So killing people, 101 or 200 or 300, is really nothing. Each group, the Shia think of the Sunnis as kuffar, as unbelievers. And the Sunnis look at the Shia and say they are unbelievers. So if they are both unbelievers, who is the believer in Islam? Nobody answers that question.
It's interesting, IQ, that while there is one shade in Islam, it has nothing to do with whether or not a Muslim is programmed to be to fight, because it does not matter if you're a Shia or Sunni Muslim, you are programmed by the Quran and by the Sunnah, by the Hadith, to fight and to kill. The shades that exist today are simply shades of who's in control, who gets to rule the roost, and that's really the only discrepancy, the only issue that divides Sunni and Shia Islam is who's in charge. If it's Shia Islam, it's the mullahs in Tehran, Iran. If it is Sunni Islam, it would be the emirs and leaders, the dictators in Saudi Arabia. So it is strictly a fight for who's in charge of the world of Islam, not on the teachings of Islam, because the teachings are essentially identical between Sunni and Shia Muslims. But the point that you make is valid. We will in the future do programs, probably a series of 8 or 9 of them, which will do nothing but cite the violent passages out of the Quran and Hadith. And we're going to do these over and over and over again on a future program, so that our listeners might know that we're not cherry-picking the worst out of what might be considered a civil and peaceful whole. But let me just share a few so that we can underscore the truth in al-Rasuli's words. Quran 988, the messenger and those who believe with him strive hard and fight with their wells and their lives and Allah's cause. Quran 9:5, fight and kill the disbelievers wherever you find them. Take them captive, harass them, lie in wait and ambush them using every stratagem of war. Quran 9:112, the believers fight in Allah's cause. They slay and are slain. They kill and are killed. Quran 9:29, fight those who do not believe until they all surrender, paying the protective tax in submission. It is
a... you can go on maybe for 3 hours.
Not 3 hours, IQ. I could go on reading Quran and Hadith quotes from Muhammad that are specifically related to fighting, to killing, to murdering, to waging in war for days. Days.
By the way, there was a report which I read in one of the Islamic books. The word qital, to fight or to kill, is repeated 33,000 times in the Quran and Hadith.
Wow.
33,000 times.
And how many times is the word peaceful repeated in the Quran?
Never once. You can't find the word peaceful anywhere in the Quran.
How about the word love?
That doesn't exist either in the Quran.
So in other words, if we were to cite all of the loving and peaceful verses in the Quran, we could do so in less than a second.
Yes.
And it would take us days to cite all of the violent, murderous verses in the Quran and Hadith, would it not?
Absolutely true. Yes, I was being very facetious when saying 3 hours.
Yes.
You're right. Days. It would take days.
Yes. As a matter of fact, because we're going to do this on a future show, I knew that today we had committed to speak about women in Islam. I took and actually pulled together a list of quotes on these subjects, and it totals 167 pages of material. So that gives you the scope of what we're going to talk about. Now, today we're going to talk about women in Islam. Now, this is going to sound like stupidity in Islam, which is a topic that we're going, I hope that we devote, between science in Islam and stupidity in Islam, my hope is that we devote several of these sessions together just on those two topics, because it is so, not only is it entertaining, and it is funny, but beyond that, what it will underscore is how stupid this religion is. And if people were aware of how stupid this religion is, fewer people would adhere to it. And the fewer people that adhere to it, the less terror will be perpetrated in this world. So there will be a method to our madness. Even here, as we poke fun at what the Quran has to say about women in Islam, understand, if women worldwide were to rise up against this religion because of what it does to fellow women, then there would be a lot less terrorism in the world. Islam's first victims are Muslims. And after Muslims, us. So let's talk a little bit about women in Islam. Let me begin with a quote, and then I'd like you to either comment on it or follow it with one of your own. This is from Tabari. It's from volume 10, page 113. As IQ knows, Tabari wrote the history of Islam. He also wrote the first commentary on the Quran. His commentary on the Quran is considered to be the most authoritative and the most enlightened, but he wrote a history that depicts Muhammad's creation of Islam and then Islam's bloody crusades out of Arabia throughout much of the known world at the time. Quote, Allah permits you to shut them, speaking of women, in separate rooms, to beat them. If they abstain from whatever they were doing, they have the rights to food and clothing. Treat women well because they are like domestic animals, and they possess nothing themselves. Allah made them the enjoyment of their bodies lawful in His Quran. What do you think that says?
Awful. I mean, anybody listening, especially the women in America, this is what's amazing. The so-called liberated women in America, not once in any of those organizations who supported women's liberation have I ever heard them make a comment on Islam and the women in Islam. There are 750 million women in Islam who are treated like domestic animals.
Correct.
750 million.
You know, we've got PETA that
10% of the population, of the human population, 10%.
Right. You know, we have organizations in America that look after and care for domestic animals.
Yes.
PETA, for example.
No, women in Islam. Yes.
But there's not an organization in America that's devoted to caring for the 750 million people in this world who are abused as if they were domestic animals, who possess nothing of themselves, whose bodies were made specifically lawful to enjoy by men in the Quran. No one seems to care.
No. And isn't that amazing? This political correctness going mad, complete and utterly mad. Before we discuss women under Muhammad.
We're to the end of this break. When we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to consider another statement that Muhammad made, this one recorded in Tabari's first volume, this one about Eve. Because the more we learn, the more we're aware that Islam should not be tolerated. It is an uncivil doctrine. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, who's an expert on Islam. We're talking about the subject of women and the treatment of women in Islam. And you will come to understand as we go through these passages from the Hadith and Quran that it is Muhammad's hatred of women that caused women to be so mistreated, be treated as domesticated animals who are beaten in Islam. This is from Tabari, Volume 1, page 280. Allah said, how this begins, which means Muhammad said, it is my obligation to make Eve bleed once every month, just as she made this tree bleed. I must also make Eve stupid, although I created her intelligent. Because Allah afflicted Eve, all of the women of this world menstruate and are stupid. End quote. Right from Muhammad's house.
Well, Muhammad lives, or Allah lives, are the same. Al-Baqarah 2.223.
Yes.
Your wives are a tilth unto you. So approach your tilth when or how you will. For those who don't understand the word tilth. Muhammadan Islam relegates womanhood to the level of a field suitable for plowing and sowing seed. And the man as the tiller. The Muslim wife is only a sex object for the Muslim husband's pleasure and desires. When, where, and how it suits him. What are mandated under Sharia law are immoral, unjust, and unacceptable instructions, such as that women can be sexually violated in any manner, time, or place that the Muslim man deems fit to do. That the husband may beat his wife with or without a reason at sue for divorce on any grounds, etc., etc. Women are invariably considered, as we said before, as objects for the Muhammadan man's pleasure and gratification. They are his plaything. Another one. Allah directed you, that is, Muhammad is talking to the followers, Allah has directed you in regard of your children's inheritance to the male a portion equal to twice that of the female. Again and again and again, ladies and gentlemen, the insults heaped upon the female of the human species are immense in number, are obscene in degree. And yet...
Yeah, here's another... Well, I was going to say, here's another Bukhari, Volume 1, Book 22, number 28. Muhammad said, I was shown the hellfire, and the majority of its dwellers were women, who are disbelievers or who were just ungrateful. When asked what they were ungrateful for, the Prophet answered, all of the favors done to them by their husbands. Muslim, Book 1, number 142. O women folk, you should ask forgiveness, for I saw you in bulk amongst the dwellers of hell. A wise lady said, why is it, Allah's apostle, that women comprise the bulk of the inhabitants of hell? The Prophet observed, you curse too much. You are ungrateful to your spouses. You lack common sense. You fail in religion. And you rob the wisdom of the wise. Upon this, the woman remarked, what is wrong with our common sense? The Prophet replied, your lack of common sense can be determined from the fact that the evidence of two women is equal to one man. That is proof. In other words, he referred to his Quran and said, you know, Allah in the Quran says that one man's witness against a woman is sufficient, but it takes two women to witness against a man. So the fact is that women, therefore, are stupid.
Al-Bukhari Hadith 1.493 narrated by Aisha, that is young child bride. The Prophet said, the things which annul prayer were mentioned before me, and those were a dog, a donkey, and a woman. So I said to Muhammad, you have compared us women to donkeys and dogs. This was 1400 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, from a young girl. She figured out what's happening. And she said so. You compare us women to donkeys and dogs, but these are domestic animals.
You are too kind, however. You are too kind, IQ. You referred to Aisha as Muhammad's child bride. Muhammad was 53 years old. She was 9 years old. Actually, when she was first given to Muhammad by her mother and father, she was taken away from her toys and thrown onto a bed with Muhammad and the door locked. When she was given to Muhammad as a sex toy, she was 6 years old and he was 50 years old. To speak of that as a child bride is I think, disgusting to the whole concept of bride and marriage. Muhammad was just a pedophile, and Aisha's parents betrayed her and gave her to this very, very sexually repulsive man. We're going to return to Muhammad and his treatment of women in Islam and his wannabe God's disgust of women when we return to Shattering Mist. And we may even speak of the reasons that Muhammad came to hate women. I am Yada. This is Shattering Mist. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, who is the world's foremost expert on the religion of Islam. We were covering the subject of women in Islam. The purpose of this is to expose the reason that women are so mistreated throughout the Islamic world. And our hope is that by understanding that this deplorable treatment of women in Islam is a direct result of the Quran and Hadith, is directly from Muhammad's personal words and example, that people would realize that if we're going to do the right thing in this world, we have to oppose Islam. That the most miserable, the most immoral thing we could possibly do in this world is to be tolerant of a religion that treats half of its people in this kind of a deplorable way. I'll read now from Quran 33:59 and then from 4:15. 33:59, Prophet, tell your wives and daughters and all Muslim women to draw cloaks and veils over their bodies. That would be better. So with that statement, all women have to parade around wearing tents, covering themselves up. Can you imagine trying to exist in this world wearing a tent where only your eyes are exposed? Quran 4:15, if any woman is guilty of lewdness, just anything that is considered lewd. Now, that would include not wearing the tent. Take evidence of the witnesses from among you against them and confine them to their houses until they die by starvation. You have a comment on that, Al-Rasumi?
Yeah, I'll add to it. Sahih al-Bukhari, hadith 7.33, narrated by Osama bin Zayd. The Prophet said, after me, I have not left any affliction more harmful to men than women. And last but not least, Yada, the most accurate appraisal of women in Muhammadan Islam is one found in Mishkat al-Masabih, volume 2, page 692 by Al-Tabrizi. It says, a woman is like a private part. When she goes out, the devil casts a glance at her. That is why women in Muhammadan Islam have to be covered from head to toe, because every square inch of their body is like a genital, which would arouse the uncontrollable sexual desires of the Muhammadan males. Back to you, sir.
There's a particularly horrible episode. You're very familiar with this, IQ, with Muhammad. There's three different times when Muhammad himself is proud of raping a woman that was made available to him through his conquests. I'm going to share the story by quoting this from Bukhari, Volume 4, Book 5, Book 52, Number 14. And there'll be two quotes regarding this. The first one reads, when we reached Kabar, Muhammad said that Allah had enabled him to conquer them. Well, this was a terrorist raid on a defenseless farming village. It was then that the beauty of Safiya was described to him. Her husband had been killed, so Allah's apostle selected her for himself. He took her with him till they reached a place called Sa'd, where her menses were over, and he took her for his wife, consummating his marriage to her and forcing her to wear the veil. Muslims said among themselves, will Safiya be one of the Prophet's wives or just a lady captive and one of his possessions? Now, let's be very clear here. Muhammad goons attacked a defenseless farming community called Kabar. They killed this woman's father. They murdered this woman's husband. And then Muhammad, hearing how attractive she was, as a slave, as a captured slave, took her for himself and then had sex with her. Rape, by definition, is sex with an unwilling partner, sex with someone who is trapped under the man's control. Safiya was raped by Muhammad. And worse than that, he raped her after murdering her father and murdering her husband. Think of the despicable nature of a man that would rape a woman after killing her father, her friends, her husband. Back to you, my friend.
Well, as you know, the case of Safiya, the Arabic word used is nakahaha. Nakaha means, in the Arabic language of the time of Muhammad, we have got to understand, I'm using the word as was understood at the time of Muhammad. Nakaha had one meaning only. Nikah means to have sex. It could be to marry, it could be to rape, and it could be to have sex. But it had exactly the same meaning. Marriage is zawaj. In Arabic, marriage, proper marriage between man and woman, is zawaj. So they say nakaha, and in the Arabic language they tell you he married her. But in fact, he raped her. Even in
yes.
the Arabic language, he raped her. You're right.
Yes.
But you are using the English version. But even
yes.
in the Arabic language, it says nakahaha. Nakahaha means he had sex with her. And to have sex with a woman who is not willing to accept it is rape. She was
right.
18 years old, by the way. She was
That's
a very young and beautiful girl.
It is amazing. In fact, Quran 24:34, speaking of enslaved women, it says, force not your slave girls into whoredom, into prostitution, if they desire chastity. Oh, you can force them into prostitution if they decide that so long as, you know, they are interested in sex, you can force them into prostitution. That you may seek the enjoyment of this life. In other words, so that you can enjoy them personally. But here's now the freedom to act like a pimp card. But if anyone forces them into prostitution, then after such compulsion, after forcing them, Allah is forgiving. So what it says here is that if you have a woman under your control, a slave, you can go off and make her a prostitute to make the money for you, and Allah doesn't care. It's lovely, isn't it?
By the way, this has been occurring in Saudi Arabia and in Lebanon more than any other countries on earth. Girls and women from East Asia, Southeast Asia, they need work. So
yes.
they apply for jobs. And the instant they get into Saudi Arabia, they actually become the slaves of the Saudi family. Whichever Saudi family is taking them. They rape them. They mistreat them. In fact, only a few days ago, a girl had her head chopped off because she mistreated or killed a child. And a year ago, another girl had her head chopped off because she killed her master who was abusing her. But of course, under Sharia law, the girl has absolutely no right whatsoever. She's not a human being.
Right.
These girls are not a human being. They are beasts. I want the listeners to understand. Any human being who is not a Muslim is only a beast. They can kill us, they can rape us, they can murder us, they can plunder us, and they can enslave us. We are only beasts.
Yeah.
It sounds outrageous, but it is outrageous. This is Sharia.
There are about 20 countries in the world, poor countries, where the country has forbidden any one of its women to leave that country to go into Saudi Arabia to be employed by Muslims there, particularly by the royal family. And the reason they have forbidden it is because of the horrid treatment of those women. Women working for the royal family in Saudi Arabia are burnt. They have their fingernails torn out. They are routinely tortured, and then they are mutilated. And it happens with reckless abandon. And there are absolutely no rights for these women. And so countries around the world, recognizing this, have made it illegal for Saudi royal family to find women in poor countries to import them to be slave labor. It is a despicable religion.
Yeah, the more despicable item is that the United Nations knows about it.
Yes.
The Western media know about it.
Yes.
The Western politicians know about it. The Western clergy know about it. And nobody says anything.
Yeah, it's just amazing. There's a story right now in the BBC talking about how, isn't it wonderful that the king of Saudi Arabia names women to a council? They can't even go to the council. A woman in Saudi Arabia can't even walk out of her home. She can't go and shop. She can't buy clothes. She can't even walk out of her home unless her husband or an adult child, male child, is with her escorting her. She has no right. She can't drive a car. She doesn't have a passport. She can't travel abroad. She has no rights. And that is the nature of Saudi Arabia today. And the media doesn't want you to know about it. Our politicians don't want you to know about it. But it is the fate of women in every Islamic country. They have no rights. They're nothing but animals. You know, there's a reason that the Islamic paradise is comprised of perpetual virgins who are described as women. And the reason is that the Islamic paradise is only pictured to reward men by a constant array of sex. And you notice that the women are perpetual virgins in the Islamic paradise because it's all about conquest. It's not about love. It's not about marriage. It's not about sharing. It's not about nurturing. It's not about caring. It's not about romance. It's about men conquering women. And that's the reward.
Sorry, you're using very nice terms also. When you're talking about Islamic paradise, it's a whorehouse.
It is. It's a whorehouse.
It's a whorehouse. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you want to know, I mean, everything you need to know about Islam is depicted in its version of heaven and hell. Allah's heaven, his paradise, is depicted as a whorehouse. The rivers run with wine, and there are perpetual virgins to conquer. And in Allah's hell, that's where Allah spends all of his time, and he's there torturing everyone who doesn't submit to him. Everything you need to know about Islam is depicted in heaven and hell. When we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to speculate a bit as to why Muhammad hated women so much that he was willing to abuse them in this way. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths today. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ is the author of a series of books called Lifting the Veil. It can be his books can be purchased at Amazon.com. Al-Rasuli.com is how you can reach him personally. We're speaking about the plight of women in Islam. Let me share some additional quotations, one from Ishaq and one from the Quran. Ali, who is, this is from Ishaq, who is Muhammad's adopted son, said, Prophet, women are plentiful. You can get a replacement, easily changing one for another. Ask your slave girl. She'll talk to you. Then Ali got up and gave her a violent beating before she could speak. Quran 24:6. And for those who launch a charge against their wives, accusing them, but have no witnesses or evidence except themselves, let the testimony of one of them be for testimony, swearing four times by Allah that he is the one telling the truth. And then, of course, the woman beheaded, killed. The man just says, I don't like her anymore. 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 She's dead. She has no rights. That's it. Sharia law. IQ, I have speculated as to why Muhammad hated women and why he treated them so badly and why Islam's legacy now is the mistreatment of women. Do you have any thoughts as to why Muhammad was so repulsive as to his treatment of women?
Yes. Khadija, his first wife, he married her, well, she married him. In fact, she proposed to marry him. She was about 40 years old. He was 25 years old, unemployable as usual. She was rich. She was very powerful. And for as long as they were married, he could not make a single wrong, have an affair or something. He couldn't do that because she was powerful. Now, I want people to understand this. She was 40 years old. By the time she died, she was about 64 years old. A 64-year-old woman in the heat of the Sahara Desert, the Arabian Desert, by that time, even her teeth had fallen, according to the hadith. She was very ugly. That is why the instant she died, literally a few months after she died, he proposed to marry, or not marry really, to rape a 6-year-old child called Aisha.
Yes.
This is exactly what happened. She was domineering, but in fact, without Khadija, this is the most remarkable thing about the story. Without Khadija, there would have been no Muhammad and no Quran. It's because of Khadija that there is Muhammad and Quran.
Correct. She's the one who supported him when Muhammad knew that it was all a bunch of lies. It was Khadija that recognized that if Muhammad could pretend to be Allah's spokesperson, that this man that she married, who was a worthless bum, all of a sudden might gain some respectability, and therefore she would gain some respectability. So she promoted the myth that Muhammad was receiving Quran revelations.
Absolutely. But no Muslim, no author in Islam has ever given her this type of credit. Why?
Yes.
It doesn't suit them. How could they give her credit when they are demonizing or not? In fact, dehumanizing women.
Right.
You know, turn them into animals, that's dehumanization.
Yeah, the Quran is very clear about the first revelation that Muhammad claims to have had. It was a horrific experience. It's very similar to Paul's experience on the road to Damascus, where he was beaten silly, where the spirit was abusive of him. Muhammad was so fearful of that experience that he ran home to his very old wife at the time. He tried to commit suicide on the way back. He told her he was demon-possessed, and she was the one who says, no, you're not going to embarrass me in this way. No. We're going to turn this into a way that you gain some respectability. And therefore, here's what we're going to say. We're not going to say that you were demon-possessed. We're not going to say that this was some frightful experience with a jinn in the desert. No, we're going to say that it was Allah, that big rock there in the Kaaba. It was Allah who was speaking to you, and that you have been chosen as Allah's spokesperson. And she drummed that into his head to gain some respectability for him and therefore herself. And had she not done that, the world would not know of Muhammad. Islam would not exist. And 10% of the world's population, 750 million Muslim women, wouldn't be treated as if they were pigs and swine.
It's true. Absolutely true. In a nutshell, he ran to her, scared, literally out of his skin, shouting, cover me, cover me. Yeah.
Right.
Well, she covered him. She really did. You know, it's amazing. It is amazing when people read, not even study, when you don't even have to study the subject. If you read the subject, you will find how obscene Muhammadan Islam is.
It's rotten to the core from the very beginning. IQ Al Rasuli, it's my pleasure to have you with me. On our next time together, we're going to do stupidity in the Quran and Hadith, and then we're going to transition into science in the Quran and Hadith. These will be very enjoyable programs, I promise.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of young...